The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Janice Peary from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Our first book today is What Pet Should I Get? By Dr. Seuss. We want a pet. We want a pet. What kind of pet should we get? Dad said we could have one. Dad said he would pay. I went to the pet shop. I went there with Kay. Kay is his little sister. And so we went in. I took one fast look. I saw a fine dog who shook hands. And so we shook. So I said, I want him. But then Kay saw a cat. She said, I want that. Then Kay said, now what do you think we should do? Dad said to pick one. We cannot take home two. Then what do you know? We saw two other kinds. Now how could Kay and I make up our minds? A pup and a kitten. They looked like good fun. Now, which one should we pick? We could only pick one. The cat or the dog? The kitten? The pup? Oh boy, it is something to make a mind up. Then I looked all around. I saw something with wings. I said, look at him. We can pick one that sings. But then, over there, said my sister Kay. We can go home with a rabbit today. Then I looked at Kay. I said, what will we do? I like all the pets that I see, and so do you. We have to pick one pet and pick it out soon. You know that Mother told us to be back by noon. And I could have done it. I could have, I bet. I could have said what pet we should get. But you know what Kay did? Do you know what she did? She said, fish, 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 fish. It may be a fish is the pet that we wish. And then I saw a new kind, and they were good too. How could I pick one? Now what should I do? And these were monkeys and another kind of bird. But we could only pick one. That is what my dad said. But how could I make up my mind in my head? Pick a pet fast. Pick one out soon. Mother and Dad said, be home by noon. The time may be now to make up my mind. But who knows what other good pets I might find? I might find a new one, a fast kind of thing who would fly round my head in a ring on a string. Yes, that would be fun. But our house is so small, that thing on a string would go bump, bump into the wall. My mother, I know, would not like that at all. So, maybe some other good kind of pet. Another kind, maybe, is what we should get. We might find a new kind, a pet who is tall. A tall pet who fits in a space that is small. My mother might like this pet best of them all. If we had a big tent, then we would be able to take home a yent. Dad would like us to have a good yent. But how do I know he would pay for a tent? And a yent seems to be an animal with a long pointy nose, very big, with stripes of fur, and a really, really, really long tail. It would not fit in a house. So you see how it is when you pick out a pet. How can you make up your mind what to get? But what if we took one of each kind of pet? Then our house would be full of the pets we would get. No, Dad would be mad. We can only have one. If we do not choose, we will end up with none. I will do it right now. I will do it, I said. I will make up the mind that is up in my head. The dog or the rabbit, the fish or the cat. I picked one out fast, and then that was that. And that's the end of What Pet Should I Get? And it doesn't say what kind of pet the brother and sister got. What kind of pet do you think they got? Where the Wild Things Are by Maurice Sendak is a story about a boy named Max. And this is the one we're going to read next. The night Max wore his wolf suit and made mischief of one kind and another. First of all, he's hammering nails into the wall with a rope across it and throwing a blanket over it to make a tent for himself. And then he's chasing the dog down the steps with a fork in his hand. He's still wearing his wolf suit. His mother called him Wild Thing, and Max said, "I'll eat you up." And so he was sent to bed without getting any supper. That very night in Max's room, a forest grew. Here the trees are starting to grow out of the carpet, all the way up to the ceiling around his bed. And the trees grew and grew until his ceiling hung with vines. And the walls became the world all around. It looks like a big forest with plants and vines and shrubs and all sorts of tall trees. And an ocean tumbled by with a private boat for Max. And he sailed off through the night and day, and in and out of weeks, and almost over a year, to where the wild things are. And when he came to the place where the wild things are, they roared and gnashed their terrible teeth. And they rolled their terrible eyes, and they showed their terrible claws. These are big monsters. Until Max said, "Be still," and tamed them with a magic trick. And here they are, all sitting still and not moving. And he tamed them all with the magic trick of staring into all their yellow eyes without blinking once. And they were frightened and called him the most wild thing of all, and made him king of all wild things. "And now," cried Max, "let the wild rumpus start." And here the monsters are jumping around and dancing and singing and making a lot of noise. And there Max is joining in, and they're all hanging from tree branches and just having a great time. And Max is riding on one of the monsters because he is the king. "Now, stop," Max said, and sent the wild things off to bed without their supper. And Max, the king of all wild things, was lonely and wanted to be where someone loved him best of all. Then, all around, from far away across the world, he smelled good things to eat. So he gave up being king of the where the wild things are. But the wild things called, "Please don't go. We will eat you up. We love you so." And Max said, "No." The wild things roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth and rolled their terrible eyes and showed their terrible claws. But Max stepped into his private boat and waved goodbye and sailed back over a year and in and out of weeks and through a day and into the night of his very own room, where he found his supper waiting for him. And it was still hot. Our next book is called Dragons, Father and Son by Alexandre Lacroix. Once upon a time, there was a little dragon called Drake. He lived with his father in a cave at the bottom of a steep-sided valley. One day, Drake's father told him, "Listen, son, you're a big boy now. It's time you behaved like a real dragon. Tomorrow you will go to the village on the other side of the mountains, where you will burn a few houses." "But why?" asked Drake. "It's tradition," rumbled his dad. "Do you want to be a dragon or not?" That night, Drake struggled to sleep, tossing and turning in the straw of his cave. He had hardly ever breathed fire, and only to grill himself a small slug or caterpillar as a snack. But burn a house? No way! The next morning, Drake flew off to the village where the humans lived. He spotted a little house on its own, with walls made of wood. "This will make a fine blaze," he thought. But just as he was taking a deep, deep breath to set the fragile building alight, Drake saw a little boy appear through the front door. "Wow, a dragon!" the child cried out. "Aren't you scared of me?" Drake asked. "No way! I've never seen a dragon before. I'm pleased that you really do exist. But do you realize I was about to set your house on fire? Burn down my house? Why?" "My dad calls it tradition." "I see. And if you don't do what he says, will you be told off?" Drake nodded. The little boy thought for a moment and then announced, "I have an idea. If you want a big blaze, I know just the place." The little boy led Drake to a square building in the center of the village. "There you go," he said. "You can set those old walls on fire." "But what is this place?" said Drake. "This is my school," answered the boy a little sheepishly. "I haven't done my homework again. If you burn the school down, I owe you a favor." "I see," said the dragon, who had never been to school and was not sure that he fully understood. Once again, Drake took a deep, deep breath. Smoke was already coming out of his nostrils when a woman appeared on the front steps. It was the teacher. "Wait, young dragon," she cried. "You can't do that." "And why not?" "Because the children who come here every day are your biggest admirers," she answered mischievously. "I've read them about the legends of your renowned ancestors, and they really loved it. They also will like to draw dragons. Stay there, and I will show you." The teacher came back in a moment with a large drawing. "Do you like it?" she asked. "Please, take it. It's a gift." On the drawing, Drake saw a majestic dragon, as red as a tomato, with a neck in the shape of an S, and teeth as sharp as an axe. "Thank you, that's very kind, but I am on a mission," the little dragon explained. "Yesterday, my dad asked me to burn a house down." The teacher thought about this and then said, "Why don't you go to the riverbank? There's an abandoned shack there that could do the trick." By the river, Drake did find a shack sheltered beside a big rock. For the third time that day, he took a deep, deep breath. He was about to produce a huge spray of fire when an old man, sitting nearby on the bank, put his fishing rod down and spoke to him. "Ah, you could not have come at a better time," the old man told him. "You see, I have caught 12 magnificent trout, but I don't have a single match. If you help me cook my lunch, I promise you a feast that you won't forget. Why not? Agreed Drake, who was a little hungry. The fisherman, who kept a few things in the old shack, went inside to look for a bag of coal and a barbecue on wheels. Drake blew over the coal, sparking long flames which roasted the fish. With their feet soaking in the river, they enjoyed a delicious meal. When Drake flew home that evening, the little dragon's father was waiting impatiently for him. "So, tell me everything, Drake. What did you do? I hope you burned down that whole village." "Well, as it happens, I didn't burn down a single house." "Why not?" cried his father. "Because I don't want to upset the villagers. They were all really kind to me." Hearing this, Drake's father exploded with anger. "What is this? Making friends with humans? What's going to become of us if they no longer fear us? They are ferocious creatures." "No, Dad, you're wrong. Look at the gift they gave me." And Drake showed him the drawing. "What is it?" "It's a portrait of you, of course. You're their biggest hero," said Drake, who had learned a lot from humans about being smart. Drake's father had to admit, the portrait was quite magnificent. Across his face, a small, proud smile appeared. Perhaps it was better to be liked than to be feared, after all. And that's the end of that book. Our next book is The Bear and the Piano by David Litchfield. One day in the forest, a young bear cub found something he'd never seen before. "What could this strange thing be?" he thought. Shyly, he touched it with his stubby paws. Plonk! The strange thing made an awful sound. So the bear left. But the next day he came back. And the day after that, too. And for days and weeks and months and years, in all seasons, spring, summer, autumn, and winter, until eventually, that's the sounds that came from this strange thing were beautiful. And the bear had grown big and strong and grizzly. When the bear played, he felt so happy. The sounds took him away from the forest, and he dreamed of strange and wonderful lands. It wasn't long before the other bears in the forest were drawn to the clearing. Every night, a crowd gathered to listen to the magical melodies coming from the bear and that strange thing. Then, one night, a girl and her father came across the clearing. They told the bear that the strange thing was a piano, and the sounds it made was music. "Come to the city with us," they said. There is lots of music there. You can play grand pianos in front of hundreds of people and hear sounds so beautiful that they will make your fur stand on end." The bear knew that if he left the forest, the other bears would be very sad. But he longed to explore the world beyond the woods, to hear more wonderful music, and to play bigger and better than he ever had before. And so, before long, the bear's name was up in big, bright lights in the big, bright city. He played sold-out concerts in giant theaters, and here he is on the stage with a beautiful grand piano and hundreds of people filling that hall to come and hear his music. Every night, he performed with such passion and such grace, to wild applause and standing ovations and huge admiration. The Bear recorded albums that went platinum. He was interviewed for magazines. He won awards. He met new people every day and created headlines wherever he went. He even went around the world and played in all sorts of different countries. The city and the rest of the world was everything he had hoped it would be. But deep down, something tugged at the Bear's heart. He had fame and awards and all the music in the world, but he missed the forest. He missed his old friends. He missed his home. So the bear decided to go back. He speedily crossed the river and excitedly pounded into the forest. He couldn't wait to tell his friends about the city. But when the bear reached the familiar clearing, it was empty. No piano, no bears, no anything. The bear started to worry that his friends had forgotten him, or that they were angry that he had left them behind. Then a friend stepped into the clearing. "Hello," cried the bear. "I'm back. I've missed you so much." Without saying a word, the gray bear ran back into the trees. "Wait," called the bear. "I'm sorry I left. Please stop." But his friend just kept running. The bear stumbled after him, moving deeper and deeper into the forest, until he saw something that made his fur stand on end. For the bear had not been forgotten. His friends weren't angry, but very proud. The bear realized that no matter where he went or what he did, they would always be there, watching from afar. They had even kept the piano safe in the shade, waiting and ready for his return. And here's the piano waiting for him, and there are pictures of him and T-shirts of him and magazine covers and different things from when he was out in the world playing different concerts and having great success in the people world. And here were all his friends gathered. So, after the bear had told his friends all about his life in the city and the many concerts he had played even around the world, he sat down to play for them once more. This time, he played for the most important audience ever, his friends in the forest. This is the story of the little red hen. Once the little red hen was getting ready to plant some wheat, and she said, "Cluck, cluck, cluck, I'll plant this wheat all in a row, and soon, dear friends, it will start to grow. Now, who will help me sow the wheat?" "Not I," said the fine feathered duck. "Not I," said the little gray mouse. "Not I," said the big pink pig. "Well, then, I'll sow it all by myself," said the little red hen. When the wheat had grown, little red hen said, "Now who will help me cut and thresh this wheat?" "Not I," said the fine feathered duck. "Not I," said the little gray mouse. "Not I," said the big pink pig. "Well, then, I'll cut it and thresh it all by myself," said the little red hen. When the wheat was cut and threshed, the little red hen said, "Who will help me carry this grain to the mill?" "Not I," said the fine feathered duck. "Not I," said the little pink mouse. "Not I," said the big pig. "Well, then, I'll carry it all by myself," the little red hen said. And so she did. When the wheat was ground, Little Redhead said, "Who will help me bake this bread?" "Not I," said the fine feathered duck. "Not I," said the little gray mouse. "Not I," said the big pink pig. "Well, then, I'll bake it all by myself." When the bread was baked, Little Red Hen said, "The bread is done, it's warm and sweet. Now who will come and help me eat?" "I will," said the fine feathered duck. "I will," said the little gray mouse. "I will," said the big pink pig. "Oh, no, you won't," cried Little Red Hen. "I've asked for help time and again, but no one proved to be my friend. So I'll eat it all by myself. Cluck, cluck." And so she did. We're going to finish up today with some nursery rhymes, which were poems specially for kids. This first one is, "Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet, eating her curds and whey. Along came a spider, who sat down beside her, and frightened Miss Muffet away." Our next poem is called, "Six Little Mice." Six little mice sat down to spin. That means spinning wool with a spinning wheel. Kitty passed by, and she peeped in. "What are you doing, my little men?" "Weaving coats for gentlemen." "Shall I come in and cut off your threads?" "No, no, Miss Kitty, you'll bite off our heads." "Oh, no, I'll not. I'll help you to spin." "Well, that may be so, but you can't come in." That cat tried to trick them, didn't he? This one is, "Mary had a little bird, feathers bright and yellow, slender legs. Upon my word, he was a pretty fellow. The sweetest note he always sung, which much delighted Mary. She often, where the cage was hung, sat hearing her canary." And this is a very famous one you might have heard before. "Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. Then Jack got up and off did trot, as fast as he could caper, to old Dame Dob, who patched his knob with vinegar and brown paper." Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.